Chapter 7 Servant of the Word Magna Macrag Civitas, Eastern Keep. They had moved the prisoner. His defiance baffling, not because of the reason behind it, but rather the physical and mental endurance it demonstrated. It had been determined a deeper pit was necessary to extract the answers desired. Yet every time the questions were asked, the prisoner responded exactly as he had before. Even when physical duress led to invasive psychic interrogation, the words did not change. Nothing moved him. He demonstrated no fear or outward sign of regret at his circumstances. Bloody, battered, the prisoner looked up at his interrogator with a wary but amused expression as he spat out a tooth.
"That was a solid hit. I actually felt that one," he said. "You should be proud."
Watching from the shadows, Titus Prato was not. Throughout the beating, he had dug furrows into the prisoner's psyche with as sharp a mental scalpel as he possessed, but yielded nothing. The warrior, armored in cobalt blue, facing the prisoner, rotated his shoulder, preparing to strike again. "Enough," Prato uttered calmly. The other ultramarine seemed reluctant to stand down and remained in place, clenching and unclenching his bloody gauntlet.
"Enough, Sergeant," Prato repeated more firmly.
Sergeant Valentius turned and nodded, breathless with exertion. He looked almost as tired as the prisoner. Prato met the sergeant's weary gaze.
"Leave us."
Valentius bowed curtly and exited the cell. As the door clanged loudly behind the sergeant, Prato stepped out of the gloom. Lingering at the edge of the corona of light cast by a single hanging phosphor globe, he drew back his hood. A scholar's face was revealed behind its folds, overly pale from time spent in the library of Ptolemy, within the fortress of Hera, and perpetually troubled. Titus Prato had dark, close-cropped hair like so many of his legionary brothers. Unlike his fellow ultramarines, his grey eyes were soft but possessed of a hunger for knowledge. This and his recently reinstated psychic abilities made him an excellent interrogator. Prato turned to his charge now. The prisoner had been afforded a moment of respite and hung his head. But as soon as Prato came closer, he looked up at the librarian.
"What now? More scrying?" he asked in a grating voice.
Never taking his eyes off the prisoner, Prato gently shook his head.
"We are beyond that."
Barthusa Narek's eyes brightened. He looked tired, and not just on account of enforced sleep deprivation.
"Death, then."
"Nothing so merciful. We shall talk."
Narek sagged, suddenly wearier.
"Do you know the definition of madness?"
he asked, then answered.
"It is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result."
"Whom do you serve, Narek?"
asked Prato, regardless, as he began to walk the circle of light.
"Come now, Titus. Are we not on first-name terms after all this time?"
Prato repeated firmly.
"Whom do you serve?"
Narek sighed, his pugilist's features softening momentarily.
"So we return to this again."
Narek was unlike any word-bearer that Prato had ever met. He had a soldier's gait and the stolid tread of a foot-slogger, though he was also reputedly an expert marksman. His manner and appearance would be better suited to Inuit rather than Colchis, but there was a sort of fervour in his eyes. Not the raw, manic sort of fanaticism Prato had seen before in the bearers of the word, but purpose and determination.
"I serve the word," said Narek, "as you already know. Whom do you serve? Your Primarch? Or your emperor?"
Prato knew he should not answer, but hoped a change of tack might yield some as yet hidden truth from the warrior.
One does not exclude the other. I serve both. And what word is that?
Narek smiled. It was an altogether ugly gesture in a face not well accustomed to levity.
An empire here, an empire there, he said, and you a loyal son to both.
It is you who lacks conviction, traitor, entirely loyal to no one.
Narek snapped.
Do not doubt my conviction. It is absolute.
As the word-bearer strained against the chains, anchoring his neck, wrists, and ankles to the floor, Prato slammed a blow into Narek's solar plexus, returning him to his seat.
Did I strike a nerve?
Prato asked, resuming his slow circling of the prisoner. Narek spat blood.
Yours are on edge, I think, he said.
Prato paused at the accusation, but did not stop. Narek followed the librarian's repeating orbit when the shackles allowed. He met his gaze now with narrowed eyes.
Why did you have me moved from my original cell? Asked Narek,
looking around to gesture to his current surroundings.
This dungeon looks no more secure than the last.
Again, Prato did not answer. The prisoner was speaking freely. He wanted to see where this was going.
Would you like to know my theory?
Tell me, said Prato.
I think your city is not as safe as you lead others to believe. I think you know my legion, or one of its allies, is coming for me, and might already be abroad in your streets. I smell the blood on them still,
Narek sneered, as I am ferried from place to place, and I can taste the fear of its populace, growing cancerously in sympathy with their doubt in you, their protectors.
He leaned forwards again, much less aggressively this time.
So, tell me, Titus Prato, how safe do you really feel?
Prato stopped circling and descended to his haunches so he could stare at the prisoner eye to eye.
Safer than you, I'd warrant. Are they coming to try and save you or kill you, I wonder?
Narek eased back, unmoved by the librarian's implied threat.
It doesn't matter. All that matters is that they're coming. You'd best be ready when they do.
Ready for whom? Asked Prato.
Narek didn't answer. His gaze went to the floor. Prato doused the light with a thought. The interrogation was over. Nothing further would be learned.
Titus,
said Narek as the ultramarine reached the cell door. Prato paused but did not turn.
You asked me what word?
Still Prato waited and did not turn.
When I touched the fulgurite, I was given a glimpse of its power, of the Emperor's power. The word I serve is that he on earth is a divine being, a god who claims to be mortal. That is the truth I serve.
Prato's gauntleted hand hovered over the door. He was about to reply when he thought better of it. The cell door clanged shut in the librarian's wake, leaving the prisoner alone. Sergeant Valentius was waiting outside. He scowled.
I will be glad of the day Lord Gilliman finally sanctions the execution of that creature. Many incarcerated within these walls are worthy of similar judgment, yet they live. Thiel brings back many stray dogs that require euthanizing, Valentius muttered. But this one slew a Primarch, or had some part in his murder. Surely there can be little of value left to learn.
Since the war, a period of fractious peace had settled across Macragg, and while the Primus worlds remained largely unmolested, those at the fringes of the Ultramarian Empire were still preyed upon by traitors. Éonid Thiel had taken it upon himself to seek out these small warbands and exterminate them. Occasionally, when he could, he returned with prisoners to be broken by the Legion Librarius, in the hope the interrogated would reveal the location of further bandits.
"It might not be his decision, brother," said Prato.
Now Valentius frowned. Prato paid little heed, nodding to the helmeted guards as he and the sergeant walked down the long corridor of the Eastern Keep in brisk lockstep. They passed several other cells on their way to the Glorian Gate, which would lead them through the Aegis Wall.
"If not Gilliman's, then whose?" asked Valentius, nonplussed.
Prato faced him with an incredulous, amused expression.
"Who do you think? Sanguinius, our emperor on Macrag."
Valentius was no dullard, but the sergeant looked genuinely taken aback at Prato's frankness.
"But this is Ultramar."
"No, brother," Prato answered sagely. "It's Imperium Secundus now." Odious as it was to admit, Narek had been right. There was upheaval in the Civitas, minor and alloyed to civilian and political rather than military concerns, but unrest all the same. There had been incidents, and now warriors wearing cobalt blue battle plate bearing the 13th Legion's Ultima regularly patrolled the streets. Curfews had been enforced after dark, and not just because of the murderous Primarch who had yet to be accounted for. A dark mood pervaded, and did so beyond the common populace. It lingered in the council chambers, too, tainting the words of the ambassadors from the other legions with compromise. Dark angels, white scars, iron hands, blood angels, august and honourable legions all, but not meant to be arrayed together, impotent of purpose. Discord and restiveness were inevitable. With his gifts, Prato felt the irritation being suppressed by the other legions more than most. A storm was gathering strength. Either it would blow itself out, or it would break upon the city. It was worse farther out, away from the seats of power on Macrag. Ultramar was no longer the empire of a half millennium of worlds. At its distant edges, some of those worlds still burned. Even though the war was over within the Primus regions, the fringes were lawless places. Everyone who had read the reports and seen the refugee chains knew it. But in this era of hard-fought freedom and prosperity, few were willing to acknowledge it. But of all the unrest that had manifested in the capital, none had stirred more so than the 18th. At last their errant lord had been found, but the truth of his arrival had been kept from them. Vulcan's presence had only been revealed after his death, the Primarch slain by the very weapon a traitor had brought to Macrag. That fact, too, was concealed, and remained so. To do anything else would have been to invite further discord, possibly even violent recrimination. And yet Titus Prato could not swear to himself that the obfuscation surrounding Barthuza Narek was just. Did the sons of Vulcan not deserve vengeance? Or at least to know one of those complicit in their father's death was being held on Macrag. Titus felt weary and tried to ease the tension from his mind by massaging his forehead with his fingers. Nothing could ease his guilt. The fulgurite had yet to be removed from Vulcan's corpse, if it even could be. A greater thorn was that his murderer still lived.